It's coming right now.
Listening to the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee Radio Broadcast, where the host is Dr. Janine James, Sister Ipua Ma'at, Sister Osati Anki, Brother Kwasi Craft, and Brother Kwojo Robinson. The Sankofa Council of Milwaukee Radio Broadcast is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank Network, and it broadcasts on the Time for an Awakening radio platform. Contact them at SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com. I repeat, SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com.
Ashe.
We'll pour to the creative spirit, the great Ashe out of which we all emerge. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to that creative spirit by whatever name we know it, whatever name you hold in your heart, in your mind, whatever name your ancestors gave, whatever name you learned as a child, whatever name you believe it to be, whatever name you believe it to be in spirit or in science. Ashe.
Okay.
We pour to the first human beings who came into existence on this planet, the first human beings who raised the first structures, who cooked the first meals, who taught the first children, who had the first children, the first Africans, the first people. who stood upright, who walked, who figured out how to stay on this planet, who figured out how to pass that knowledge on to their children and their children's children, the mothers and fathers of civilization. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour the next libation to their grandchildren, their children's children, those who raised the great early civilizations of Kemet and Kush and Mono Mochapa, the great medieval civilizations of Ghana and Mali and Songhai and Kanem-Bornu. We pour to those who raised the great civilizations of the Igbo people and the Hausa people and the Kikongo people and the Mbara people, the great Monday civilizations, the great Kikongo, the great civilizations of Southern Africa, the Bantu people, the great civilizations of Southeast Africa, the Dinka, the Shilluk, the Nuer. We pour to those millions who raised the foundations from which the world would learn what it meant to be human in the world. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to their children who, upon the arrival on the shores of people they had never seen before, found themselves captured and marched overland, found themselves perishing by the millions before they were held on the holding cells and the open air pens on the coast of West, Central, Southern, and East Africa. We pour to the ancestors who did not know, as they were stripped of all clothing and sent denuded into boats, packed like animals and strewn their bones across the floor of the Atlantic and the Indian Ocean. We pour to them who in the last moment on Africa grabbed the sand and grabbed the dirt and put it in their mouths and understood that the only thing they might have to preserve their place in that continent was their memory of that place and their ability to pass it on to their children. We pour to them. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to those Africans and their children who, finding themselves cast adrift in Santiago, Cuba, who found themselves cast adrift in Puerto Spain, Trinidad, and Port-au-Prince, Haiti, who found themselves cast adrift in New Orleans and Charleston and Mobile, who found themselves cast adrift in Salvador, Bahia, who found themselves cast adrift in Barbados and the archipelago that formed the Wayward and the Windward Coast. We found them in these places learning Portuguese and Spanish and French, whose often first words was, "Oh my God, oh Madre de Dios," who found themselves praying to survive and pass on to their children the memories. We pour to those ancestors who are represented in the thousands buried in all the square miles of where we stand and who sit here buried before us in 400 caskets forged of wood from West Africa with Adinkra symbols. Each one of them, each woman, man, and child, symbolic of millions. The children of those who could not be killed, we pour, Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to their children who somehow survived the hells of enslavement and fought for emancipation in the Caribbean, the French, British, Dutch Caribbean, who fought for emancipation in South America, who fought for emancipation in Central America, who fought the struggles we refer to as the Civil War in the United States, who came out of that, marched out of enslavement through Reconstruction, and found themselves making great migrations, eventually ending up in places like New York. Their children's children, who making a way for themselves became our great-great-grandparents, our grandparents, our great-grandparents, our parents. Those who, when the first bones were discovered in this space, held their hands and said, "Stop! No more! We are here to speak for those who can no longer speak with their mouths." We pour for those ancestors, some of whom came to Howard University in 2004 and followed these caskets all the way back to New York. We pray to the great ancestors, the ones whose names we know and the ones whose names we don't. And at this moment, as we pour this libation, I would ask anyone who feels comfortable to say the name of someone in your bloodline who is no longer physically here, but who you know made it possible for you to be here. Go ahead, let's hear the names.
Heywood Carr.
Porter Griffin.
Thomas Lord Jr.
Evelyn Glover.
Isaac Blakey.
We pour to the names that we hold collectively. Ganga Zumba in Brazil. Toussaint Louverture, Jean-Jacques Dessalines, and Henri Christophe in Haiti. We pour to the great Avengers, Nanny of the Maroons of Jamaica. We pour to the great ancestors, Harriet Tubman, Sojourner Truth, Frederick Douglass. Say the names that you study. Who are the names of the ancestors that you have come to hold in your heart and your mind as you hope that you can do what they did for us, for your children and children's children? Let's say some of those famous names.
Malcolm X,
John Henry Clark, John Jackson, Jacob Carruthers. And finally, two final libations. We pour to those who make it possible for us to do what we do. We pour to these rangers who stand guardian over this sacred space. we pour to these Africans and these folks who have come from Howard University, the staff, the faculty, the administrators who brought us here today to bear witness. This is not a libation, but an affirmation, because their hearts still beat, their tongues still speak, their minds still think, and their minds still wish the best for us. We pour for all of those people who surrounded us on this journey today and made it possible for us to be here. We pour this affirmation of thanks, Ashe.
Ashe.
And finally, we pour to your children's children's children who will one day stand on this faith and speak your name.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
Finley Medical Clinic. We serve uninsured, underinsured, and insured individuals. Open Monday through Thursday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Urgent care clinic Friday and Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Call for an appointment at 414-988-3079. Finley Medical Clinic is accepting new patients. Vaccines and screenings for uninsured, underinsured, and insured. Located at 10721 West Capitol Drive, Suite 110. Call our office for an appointment today at 414-988-3079.
Sweetest thing I know, the love that he has shown to me, and I can hear it in your tone, and I'm ready to say I do. Love is redefined when I look into your eyes. And there, yeah, and all the world taught me were lies. Now my eyes can see the truth. And I'm ready to learn to love you, and I'm ready to follow you as you follow yeah. I will do my part, yeah, yeah. Do 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 do. Yeah, yeah, do 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 do. Yeah, yeah, do 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 do. Do 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 do. You give me new life. Set my spirit free, and I'm so proud to be your wife. I pray God give me what you need. Help me. I'm ready to learn to love you. I'm ready to follow you as you follow Yah. Yes, I will do my part. Yeah,
just be patient.
Thank you.
You are listening to the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee Radio Broadcast, where the host is Dr. Janine James, Sister Ipua Ma'ak, Sister Osati Anki, Brother Kwasi Crabb, and Brother Kojo Robinson. The Sankofa Council of Milwaukee Radio Broadcast is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank Network, and it broadcasts on the Time for an Awakening radio platform. Contact them at SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com. I repeat, SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com.
Welcome. This is Dr. Janine James of the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee. We are very happy to have you with us here today. We have our other members of the Sankofa Council today who will be hosting, and that is Baba Kwojo Robinson and Mama Sister Asarta Aunty. So we are so happy to be here with you. And Mama Asarta, would you please give the purpose of the Sankofa Council?
Good evening, Dr. Rogers. Dr. James. Yes, I will. The purpose of the Sankofa Council organization is to bring unity and cooperation to create a healing environment for our community. In one way, providing information and sharing through this very broadcast.
Thank you for that information for our listeners. And we will be talking today with our two very esteemed guests who are coming to talk with us so that we may learn more about who our ancestors are. Do we know who our ancestors are? How much do you know about your family tree? Genealogy is the study of the history of past and present members of a family. How much do you know about your relatives who lived even 100 years ago? Our guests, Ruhamalan Amin Kwander, knows about his relatives who lived more than 400 years ago. The Kwanders know where their ancestors lived, even in Africa. We also have guest Patricia Glover, whose career has also been one of research to learn more about families and their ancestors. And we have, as we go into our meeting with our two guests, we'd like to give our ancestral profile, who actually is a ancestor for one of our guests, and that is Nellie Kwander. And well, Sister Asarta, if you would please give the ancestral profile for Nellie Kwander.
Well, I could do that if you want me to.
All right.
Nellie Kwander was born on this date in 1880. She was a Black teacher and community activist born in Washington, D.C. Nellie Mae Kwander was the daughter of John Pearson Kwander and Hannah Bruce Ford Kwander. the Kwanda family can trace their lineage 300 years in Maryland and Virginia. They are one of the oldest free black families whose ancestors were slaves in America. Her father was a descendant of Nancy Kwanda, one of the slaves freed by President of the United States, George Washington. In his last will, in addition, Nellie's mother was a relative of West Ford, a freed mulatto and supposed son of George Washington. During her early years, she attended Washington, D.C.'s public school. She graduated from Minor Normal School with honors. When Kwanda entered Howard University, only one-third of 1% of African Americans and 5% of whites attended any college. While enrolled at Howard University, Kwanda also taught students at the Garrison School in Washington, D.C. In June 1912, he graduated with a Bachelor of Arts degree, magnum cum laude, in History, Economics, and Political Science. Kwanda became a member of Alpha Kappa Alpha at Howard University. She was the chapter's president on October 11, 1912, Alpha Kappa Alpha sorority meeting. During the meeting, six organizational members were voting to change the name symbols and different standards. Kwanda appealed to them to honor the vows they had taken just months earlier, but the girls would disagree. She was horrified at the episode. After the young woman withdrew, Kwanda began contacting graduate members to establish the sorority that started years before. Kwanda Minnie Smith, Norma Boyd, Julia Ever Evangeline, Brooks, Nellie Pratt, Russell, and Ethel Jones Mowbray moved to incorporate Alpha Kappa Alpha in January 29, 1913, Alpha Kappa Alpha got started. After leading the initiative to incorporate the sorority, Kwanda served as president of Alpha Kappa Alpha. In 1913, at the first boule at Howard, she was officially elected president. After serving 6 years in the next boule in 1919 in Chicago, Illinois, she resigned. She wrote the Constitution's preamble and appointed fellow members to implement the sorority's expansion during her tenure. Later, Kwanda was the first director of the North Atlantic region of Alpha Kappa Alpha. She established the first Alpha Kappa Alpha scholarship for a senior with the highest grade point average in the School of Liberal Arts. She was also the school founder of Zeta Chapter at Wilberforce University. She continued to act as graduate advisor to the Alpha Chapter and was a member of the Xi Omega Chapter in Washington, D.C. After graduation, Kwanda taught for the public school system in Washington, D.C., serving generations of students for 30 years. Because the district was part of the federal government, black teachers in the public schools were on the same scale as whites. The system attracted many outstanding teachers. 1914 to 1915, Kwanda studied at Columbia University to earn her Master's of Arts degree. Later, she pursued additional postgraduate degrees. From 1916 to 1917, Kwanda was a special field agent for the Children's Bureau for the Department of Labor. In this position, she observed the social and economic structure of mentally disabled people in Newcastle County, Delaware. The local women's club sponsored the study to establish an institution for the mentally disabled. Quandra attained a degree in social work at New York University and studied economics at the University of Washington. I have much more to read about this wonderful lady, and but we're going to have a discussion about her in a moment. So that's the bio sketch. Wonderful woman, Mary Quandra. And she has a relative with us this evening as one of our guests. And her relative is Rahulamin Quandra. Our guest author has a newly published book, The Quandras Since 1684, An Enduring African-American Legacy, documenting the sustained history of one of America's oldest African-American families, from trials and tribulations to turning stumbling blocks into stepping stones. The Quandra story unfolds with examples of faith, strength, focus, character, and triumph, acknowledging the contributions of those who came before, building upon their achievements and successes to the benefit of future generations. This is a record of accomplishment, despite whatever racially inspired obstacles were placed as inhibitors on the road to success. He is a native Washingtonian, a retired senior administrative law judge for the District of Columbia, and holds a bachelor's degree from 1966 and a J.D. Juris Doctor's degree, 1969, from Howard University. The Quandra family's distinguished history traces to the 1670s, in the Maryland and Virginia colonies, which legacy includes enslavement of George Washington's Mount Vernon plantation. Judge Quandra periodically served as an advisor to Mount Vernon, most recently for the exhibit, Lives Beyond Together, Slavery at George Washington's Mount Vernon, and still maintains close ties. He frequently states that the Quandra story is not so much an African-American story as it is an American history story, written from an African-American perspective. And we're blessed to have more than one guest tonight. We have another guest. And I have a brief bio sketch of Patricia Glover Howard. Glover Howard is an educator, tutor, and genealogy enthusiast, and she will be sharing resources for African-American genealogy with us this evening, chattel slavery research, and DNA, as well as resources for finding free people of color. She will tell you how you can get started on your genealogical journey. Her genealogical journey started when she was contacted by a paternal cousin through 23andMe. Patricia decided to work and volunteer as co-host for the Bernice Bennett blog, talk show, radio, talk to hone her skills. Patricia is the current president of the African American Genealogy Society of Milwaukee and former board member and vice president of meeting programming for the Milwaukee County Genealogical Society. So those are our two guests.
First of all, thank you. I appreciate that beautiful, beautiful introduction. I am Rahulamin Quandra, and I hope you can hear me all right.
It is my pleasure to be with you this evening and to spend some time with the audience of the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee and the general public. I am a native Washingtonian, and I have been blessed to be a member of the Quandra family, about which you have heard something over the last several minutes. We, as members of the Quandra family, understand and appreciate that we are very blessed to be who we are, but we do not take and we will not take any attitude or feeling that we have anything special or super or that we are more than anybody else. Indeed, we try to be, and I certainly do, try to be humbled by the presence that the Almighty Father has visited and blessings he's visited upon us to help us be and understand and discover who we are and who, most importantly, whose we are, which also means we have a mission and a responsibility to share with others. As this program proceeds this evening, you're going to hear and learn a lot about what we have done, how we did it, and from my good friend and actually distant cousin, Patricia Glover, how it can be done, how you can do it, what you can do. You may not be able to do as much as we have been fortunate to do. Maybe you can do more, because it's a question of being able to find certain things that will serve as an inspiration to you. The Quandra story begins in the book is titled The Quandra Since 1684, An Enduring African-American Legacy. But actually, it begins in the 1670s, where there's a compilation of people who are assembled in the Maryland, Virginia colony area. And our name, of the last name only, happens to appear on that list. That's how we know we were documented and present here in the 1670s. But our visibility began under a will of 1684 when the enslaver, a man named Henry Adams, who migrated from England in 1639, he wrote his will in 1684. And under that will, he provided for the emancipation of two of his enslaved. And by name, they were Henry Quando. His name was Henry Adams, so he probably abandoned Henry's original African name and named him after himself. So Henry Quando, Q-U-A-N-D-O. And one of the other of his enslaved, Margaret Pug, P-U-G-G. And he provided for their freedom in his will, and he died in 1686. And from that year, 1686 forward, Henry Quando and Margaret Pug were basically cast out. They were both very young. They obviously were not literate. And although they were freed, they had to make a way for themselves, making essentially a way out of no way. And it's that resilience that has been imbued with us. We talk about the strong who survived the Middle Passage. The strong who survived were able to get here in 1619, handcuffed, arriving down in the Port Comfort area, in the Hampton, Virginia area. And they are the ones from whom we, the rest, are largely and significantly descended. But I tell people all the time that we need to look at our ancestors and forebears as heroes, who made it possible, came to this country, and over sustained time, centuries indeed, have built this country to the point where we are who we are and have been successful in getting to the place where we are today. So Henry and Margaret, under the will, they received some farm tools, which of course is quite typical because most of the people of that time were farmers, and they set out a life for themselves. And as the records bear and indicate, and this is one of the main ways that one is able, if you are in a position where there are records, where you are able to find out who your ancestors were, something about what they did, what contributions they may have made, and in many cases, because of us being African, how we were mistreated by the majority white community that had migrated here. But out of that mistreatment, if you read further, the mere fact that they spoke up, they spoke out, they stood up, they wanted to be counted in every thing that society had, they sought to avail themselves of, chose resilience. And the book that I most recently published on the Kwanda family, The Kwandas in 1684, An Enduring African-American Legacy, is really a tale. We talk about a tale of two cities. Well, this was a tale of two societies. And it's told, as I tell everyone I talk to, it's not black history. It's American history, told from an African-American perspective. Because while they may have been in court because, and this is a typical example, Henry Kwando, his son, had by the same name, apparently was a carpenter. He, as an example, he built a small house for somebody and had a problem getting paid. And the white man and his wife, it didn't say why they didn't pay or didn't want to, but the fact that he stood up and went to court in, say, in the year 1741 demonstrates clearly that Henry Kwando felt he had a right. And he did win, fortunately, but had he not won, say, had he lost, the mere fact that he was bold enough to go to court, the fact that he was bold enough to speak up, shows that entrepreneurial spirit. And later, in researching some old records in the Maryland Hall of Records, running across the library book and reading that story, and needless to say, it's a little faded in the ink, and reading it with the magnifying glass to bring it up a little clearer, you can see the entrepreneurial spirit. You can see the focus. You can see the determination. You can see Maya Angelou and Langston Hughes long before they came along, and still I rise. I know why the caged bird sings. So you can see those things emerging, and that is the inner strength that we as members of the Kwanda family have been blessed to draw upon and to share with others who we want to lift up as we ourselves climb. So as I go forward, I invite Dr. James, anybody else, to interject or ask me any questions or make any comments, because I like this to be not so much a monologue, but a dialogue where possible. And I would be delighted also if Patricia chimes in and adds anything she'd like to say as I can go forward. But I'd like to stop at this moment and ask if there are any comments or anything some of the audience would like to say, or some of those who are in the Sankofa Council who are present on this call would like to interject. Do I hear someone?
Well, I'd just like to comment briefly about Henry Kwando, who won a legal court case in 1741.
That is correct.
Wow.
And let's go back. I'm glad you asked that, because let's take a little side trip. Henry Kwando the First and Margaret Pugh, they got their freedom in 1684. And it's unclear whether this Henry Kwando in 1741 was their son or their grandson. Same name, though. But before we got that far, in the 1690s, Henry was able to obtain a 99-year lease in 1695. 99-year lease on some land, which they used as farming land in southern Maryland, in Charles, right on the border of Charles County and Prince George's County, Maryland. And they took that land and they farmed it for several years, generations. And it shows that they were beginning to be entrepreneurs, showing that spirit, because he registered his cattle so that his cattle with a brand, you would know, be able to separate his cattle from other people's cattle at the end of the day. So the spirit was very much in place. And they had at least three daughters. And the three daughters got into some trouble, having unfortunately born some children out of wedlock. And the record shows, according to the records, that all of the children were from white men, because they used, I won't use the term on this radio, very degrading terms for the children, but referred to them as mulatto. So that tells me that they were the children of a mixed relationship. And it underscores that our people, unfortunately, have been abused by members of the majority race for a long time, but they were still resilient because despite that, they still moved forward. They're still created. They still became whoever they were. And the business of farming, the business of entrepreneurship, Henry Kwando also, in addition to being a carpenter where he built the house of this man, the record shows later on in other places in the record that he must have had some type of, even if it was in that home shop, but he had a business because there are indications of retail sales, merchandise being sold, paper for rolling tobacco to make cigarettes, and stockings for ladies that he obviously imported from somewhere. And these are part of the inventory of who these good folk people were. And although the number of Kwandos in that free group was rather thin in terms of actual numbers, they kept popping up every few years in the records, whether it be a census record, a inventory of someone who died, their inventory of assets, or some other indication. One of those people, Margaret Godfrey, and her last name was Kwando, so she apparently married in. When she passed away, it was just a day or two, I think, before the 4th of July, 1776. Very interestingly, I often say when I go out and talk to people, I wonder what she would have had to say on July 2nd, 1776, knowing, if she did, that the Declaration of Independence was about ready on that day, even though it was the 4th of July that it was declared. What she would have said about all men are created equal. Well, first of all, that said men, not women, and endowed with certain inalienable rights. Well, her rights were not considered to be inalienable, and decrying the tyranny that was coming to this country from the king. Well, what about us as black people? We are subjects of victims of this tyranny. And I use her as an example, even if we don't have her words, because she was there at that very pivotal moment when this was going on. And we look back and use that as a point of reference, as a point of inspiration, because it gives us some thought, some anchoring as to our people were here, our people were present, and we were doing things, we did things. And I mentioned in my conversations and in the book, too, that the book is full of the rest of the story. While we have people like George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and Alexander Hamilton and Benjamin Franklin, they're off doing whatever they were doing, founding the nation. But at the same time, you had the enslaved Africans, and some of them were Kwandos because there's more than one branch of the family, who were back at the plantations, George Washington's in particular, getting the plants in, getting the plants outed at the end of harvest, running the distillery, running the fisheries, making sure that everything was in proper order so that George Washington and Alexander Hamilton could go off and pursue the American Revolutionary War, where Thomas Jefferson could be busy writing declarations of independence, where James Madison could be writing constitutions. And we have to understand that the strength of this nation is built upon those of us who have very sturdy and strong shoulders, because we kept it going. We built, literally, and I do mean it, literally, Washington, D.C. It was built by enslaved labor. Enslaved Africans built the United States Capitol. Can't say there were any Kwandos in there. Enslaved Africans built the White House. Enslaved Africans laid down the streets of Washington, D.C. And it was an enslaved African named Benjamin Banneker, who was right here in Washington in 1791, by which time we were Kwandos were well established, who did the first component of the survey that became the underlying base for where the Washington, D.C. would be and the buildings that are in Washington, D.C. would be. And we also have lines there. The Kwando family has more than one line. We have the story in the family of the two brothers who are brought here, and apparently it's from Ghana, West Africa. We visited with them. I'll talk about that in a minute. And they were, according to oral history, separated when they got to the islands. Apparently, we think Barbados, but we don't know for sure. And they were not able to get back together, although from our oral history, they were both brought here to Maryland. And apparently one line got free and the other stayed enslaved. And that line that was enslaved, some of them gradually got their freedom as time went on. But, of course, the ones who were free, that they are the ones who provided the benchmark for establishment of being able to find the Quandos in the Quando and Quandos in the records of whether it be census or tax records or court records, et cetera, land records. And it is that bedrock upon which our foundation was built. Now, as time went on, we mentioned that George Washington had certain ancestors in his enslaved inventory, and they were freed under his will. But for those who don't know, when George Washington wrote his will, he provided for the freedom, he used the word manumission, of those who were his enslaved. And of the 317 that were there on the date of George Washington's death in December 14, 1799, 123 were under his quote-unquote ownership. You can't own people, but I use that word in quotation marks. The others belonged to be Martha, or they had been rented from someplace else. And of those 123, there were some people in there who were part of the Quanda family. And that is where the legacy of the Quandas to George Washington traces. Now, you said in the introduction, you mentioned Bushrod Washington. Maybe you didn't. You mentioned West Ford. And West Ford was one of those definite Quanda ancestors. And who his father is a subject of quite a bit of ongoing discussion. One group says and attributes the fatherhood of Bushrod Washington, West Ford, to Bushrod Washington, who was George Washington's nephew. Another group will assert that they are of the opinion that George Washington himself was the father of West Ford. Me, I don't know. I wasn't there. I am more inclined to say it was Bushrod Washington, but I'm not basing that upon any personal knowledge. But when you say the Quanda family is descended or related to the Washington, George Washington's family, that is the blood connection. And even those at Mount Vernon who are the most learned are inclined to say, yes, we believe that is the case. There has not been any DNA test. I wonder why they don't want to know the results. I'm going to leave that to you to figure that out. And we have had and continue to have our annual, up until COVID, of course, face-to-face reunions. We're pushing towards 100. The first one started in 1926, so we're getting there. And we're hoping and we're praying that we will indeed be able to have our, 96, 97, whatever, reunion this August face-to-face. But the last two have been by Zoom and virtual, so we've kept the spirit going. But I tell you, there's nothing like an old, down-home African-American family reunion. One more point, and then I'll pause again. When I was at Howard University in the 1960s, I met a lot of students from West Africa who were calling me Mr. Quando. And I didn't think anything of it at first, but then after it happened about the fourth of the time, I stopped and corrected somebody, and he said to me, "You must not know the origin of your name." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "That's an African name from the Akan group." Well, I was learning. I was, 18 years old, just learning about this. And the question came up about the fact that he was calling me Quando, ending in D-O, and we were Quander, ending in D-E-R. Asking some of the older members of the family, they said, "Oh, yes, we heard that the name used to be Quando, but back there somewhere, someone, maybe it's necessary to change the name." And when I became aware of that and becoming more Afrocentric, began to understand that with the naming patterns of the Quando, Q-U of Anglo and K-W of the Akan language was the same in pronunciation. And ending in D-O with a silent H on the end was an Akan language that came primarily and largely from Ghana, West Africa. And that piqued us to beginning to look more carefully. And as we did and came in touch with more students from West Africa, we became more and more aware of the probable Ghanaian connection to the Kwanda family. And as we researched even further, we came to realize not many, but there are some who have the same spelling as we, and they have the Akan origin of KW to our QU. We have been there to meet with the Kwanda family, and they have been here, some of them, to meet with the Kwanda family. And we are featured in the museum in Cape Coast, where the Kwanda family is from that particular area, from the Cape Coast region, from the villages of Salt Pond, in the Salt Pond region. And we've been to some of the ancestral villages, Khan Kaboom and Mpizodazi, just two of the villages, and there are others as well. I'll pause here for comment, or questions, or whatever you want to do at this point.
We want to get Patricia Glover in. She has a lot to say about the DNA that you mentioned earlier and about the separate line of the single. Dr. James, would you kind of say something? Dr. James?
Yes.
Yes, that's how I met you.
I think we want to go into our, we'd like to hear from Patricia, but I don't have her break up because we're going to need to give a sponsor announcement. So, Sister Asarta, if you would give that sponsor message, and we're going to come back with Patricia just after the top of the hour.
Okay.
All right. Our sponsor, EDOC Advice, is a website created to provide a place to go get answers to your health or medical concerns. Are you wanting more options than you feel you're getting? Let EDOC Advice help you solve your problems. Go to their website and ask your questions. Their experienced professionals will help you to obtain the help you need that makes sense for you. They do not replace your health professional or provide you care, but they do help you become a better consumer so that you can get the best information to make a truly informed decision. They network with other professionals through the country and bring that information to you. www.edocadvice.com.
Thank you, Sister Asarta, for providing that information. We are engaged in just a wonderful review of a family, the Kwanda family, and hearing some information about them, and this has been very exciting, especially as we learn how this family came to find out their origins in Africa, which is even more than many of us would imagine having had that opportunity. We have the privilege of having someone as our guest, this Patricia Glover, who's going to be talking with us after the top of the hour about what she does in helping families learn about their family tree and what techniques that you can learn and use to get more of this exciting kind of information that the Kwanders have been able to gain, and how you can learn some of this same kind of information for your family as well. And we look forward to hearing how that can be done, and also to hear from our listeners. But we'd like to take this opportunity to, since we're at the top of the hour, to go to that point, and then we will come back to our guests and our listeners.
Finley Medical Clinic. We serve uninsured, underinsured, and insured individuals. open Monday through Thursday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Urgent care clinic Friday and Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Call for an appointment at 414-988-3079. Finley Medical Clinic is accepting new patients. Vaccines and screenings for uninsured, underinsured, and insured. Located at 10721 West Capitol Drive, Suite 110. Call our office for an appointment today at 414-988.
Listening to the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee radio broadcast, where the host is Dr. Janine James, Sister Ifua Ma'at, Sister Osati Anki, Brother Kwasi Craig, and Brother Kwojo Robinson. The Sankofa Council of Milwaukee radio broadcast is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank Network, and it broadcasts on the Time for an Awakening radio platform. Contact them at SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com. I repeat, SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com.
Thank you so much. We are back to our program today. What do you know, or how do you know about who your ancestors are? And we're coming back with our guest Patricia Glover, but we're going to have Baba Kwojo give her her introduction. I think we started it, but Brother Kwojo, let's welcome in Patricia Glover.
Yes, welcome, Patricia. Thank you for being so patient. And this is a very program. I'm just so impressed with the work that your family member, I believe, has done in writing a book to document his not his family tree, but your family tree. Can you tell us why is being in touch with the family tree going all the way back to Africa? Why is that so important?
Okay. Hi. Yes. It's Patricia Glover Howard. Thank you, Sankofa Council and Dr. James, Dr. Rogers, and others. As well as distinguished guest, Roquander. We have said that we're distant cousins. I think it's important because of what Mr. Rowe said. He said it's not Black history, it's American history, and specifically African American genealogy is looking at it through our lens. We have the pen. It's our story. We're the star in the story. No one else is narrating our story. As you mentioned, I am the president of the African American Genealogical Society of Milwaukee, and our goal and mission is to preserve and to perpetuate the records of our Black ancestors and to encourage contemporary and future African Americans to preserve their records of their families and their communities. We meet virtually. We were meeting at one point at the Villard Library, but now we've moved everything online. And we meet on third Saturday, each third Saturday of the month from 1:30 till 3:30. And you'll learn how to do genealogy. Walk you through the basic steps, which are starting with what you know. And that's exactly what I did. I come from a family where my mother lost her mother when she was 6 months old. She lost her dad when she was 12. Now, I was blessed to have had family reunions since 1968 and to be born into the baby boom generation. So I was always around my mother's siblings and other ancestors, as well as my dad's side. I've always known a family. When they died about 25 years ago, rest in peace, I felt like those secrets and different things like that were probably buried long enough for me to go and excavating and digging them up. And so I just became interested in genealogy, as well as knowing someone had to carry on this tradition that they started, as I said, in 1968. So I learned how to do genealogy. I took a DNA test first, and I was waiting to take a class with Tony Burrows. You may have heard of him. He's the author of Black Roots. And I was waiting to take a class with him. And in the meantime, I went to the most reliable source that you can, Professor Google. So I Googled my dad, because, again, he had been gone for a while, and he's 50 years older than me. And so though I didn't necessarily remember a lot of what he told me, because I was quite young when he told me those stories. So I Googled my dad. His name is Floyd Blakey, and he's from Yankton, South Dakota. And I knew there weren't going to be very, very many, too many men named Floyd Blakey from Yankton, South Dakota. Well, immediately, information popped up on him. So that's another search tip. You never know who's already done the research, and you can connect with them. And so what I found was tons and tons of information that had been chronicled and written about on our family on Find a Grave. And right away, I got the name of my grandparents. I got the name of my great-grandfather, Isaac Blakey, who fought in the Civil War. I got the name of my two-times great-grandfather, Andrew White. And so one thing just led to another. I start reaching out to those DNA cousins. They started giving me information. There were more stories and more pictures, and I've been able to connect on both sides of my family from the first through the eighth generation, first through the eighth generation. And on my maternal side, we've been able to go back and Sankofa, if you will, go back and fetch 232 years. So that is the kind of thing that you can learn how to do at African-American genealogy. We walk you right through those steps. One last point. I'm just so glad that this research is not easy as we might make it sound. It's a lot of painstaking, a lot of hours. But there's one thing that I wanted to add is that through that, I learned a lot about what my parents had gone through, my grandparents and great-grandparents. And I echo those points that Robe made about resilience. There was a lot of pain that I learned about, and I know that that's one of the barriers for getting started. But I'm glad to be teamed up on this phone call with someone like Robe, because for me, what I want to do is to be able to turn that pain into power. And so this is the year to do that. So, again, thank you for your time, and I will avail any questions that you have.
Well, thank you. We appreciate this information, this introduction. We do have a caller. Caller is number 334-414, 334-414.
Good evening, Dr. James, and good evening to your guests, Brother Kwanda and Sister Glover. Thank you so very much for sharing your information. You know, I'm because of the fact that I became very disillusioned with genealogy. And the reason being was because in my youth, I never really cared about who was who, right? And then time went on, and then there was a natural disaster called Hurricane Katrina that wiped out everything on the face of the earth, so to speak. And so as I hear different people's stories, I kind of reflect on myself and wonder, could I ever get that kind of energy back? And so I really kind of postponed it. But really what I'm doing, in a sense, is talking with my number one and only son. I'm not a grandfather as of yet or anything, but I'm talking with him with regards to trying to supply as much on me to him in hopes that he gets that bug. Is this a way that could be utilized? Is there a way that could be utilized as such to try to stimulate genealogical research within family structures? And admittedly so, I have one of those last names that's, you know, not quite common. So is that something that maybe I should take further under consideration?
Well, Wanda will comment first, I guess. But I'm going to let Patricia really try to get that. We need to know, as African people, who we are and more about where we came from. I think that one thing, and this is not getting into the details of chapter and verse, but the conversation you need to have is what I would call the talk, to get your young son, who may not be that young, to understand that we are people of resilience. We came from somewhere, and we brought a whole lot of skill to this country when we were brought in the holds of those ships. And we've got to be a people who will carry on that legacy. And hopefully he will be mature enough to understand that legacy is hidden somewhere, ready to be unlocked, and that he can carry it forward and would potentially be quite surprised to find out what he might find out. I would take that approach. Now, the getting down in the details as far as going to various sources and records, Patricia and I both know that, but I'm going to let her address it particularly. Carry it away.
Okay. Yes, you know, I would, again, depending on his age, one of the things that I found out by doing this genealogy is that I learned more about me than I thought. Actually, when I first started, I wasn't quite sure. I'm an entrepreneur, and I was transitioning, trying to figure out my next steps. Through the genealogy, I found out that I wasn't an entrepreneur. It wasn't something that I was doing. It was something that I was. I was able to go back through the records and see several people on my direct line who were employers, and talk to, get some oral history about another great-grandfather who was employing people. So it just really, again, it made it bigger than me. And so again, depending on your son and how he receives information, maybe introduce him to ancestry. Maybe it's a short video. Maybe it's watching Henry Louis Gates. Maybe it's just pulling out a piece of paper and just sharing a story. I'm not sure. There's lots of activities that are out there free through FamilySearch.org. But again, it's going to depend on your son.
Thank you.
We can lead people to a certain place, but we can't force them to do it. But just as we're saying, you're providing him with something that will hopefully spark his interest to want to know more, want to do more. And you know, it's a funny thing. It sometimes it takes that little spark, but that little spark can turn on so many lights I think I talked to people who've gotten into genealogy and various organizations. They said, I discovered something, and it just made me so excited. I found an old record from an old wherever, church or Bible or somewhere in the courthouse. Or somebody told me about a school record, and it just turned my lights on. And I think this is how a lot of people really get caught up in the so-called genealogy bug. And if he is that type of person, I don't know him, but if he is, that might be the one thing, one little spark of light and interest that can get him going. And I would hope that it would, because this is so important to know who we are, as I said in the beginning, and whose we are. That is all part of the whole industry, if you want to call it that.
And I would say just one last thing, model it. A lot of times, you know, as parents, we want to tell them what to do, walk the walk, you know. So if you want him to be interested in genealogy, again, lead the way. Hopefully, you know, he will follow or may be interested. So that tends to work quite often.
Thank you.
So we have another caller at 708-631-708-631. Do you have a question or comment for us? Okay, well, we're happy to have you tune in with us, and we will continue our discussion. I became interested in this process about 10 years ago while visiting a friend in North Carolina, and I did not know much about relatives that were from the East Coast, and she introduced me to a library that focused around genealogy, and I have subsequently been able to fill in some of those gaps. And I find, though, that many families are embarrassed for a variety of reasons about some of their history, and this may be the reason that they don't talk a lot about it, but I was one of those children who was listening for the names and listening for information, and I would ask questions, and many times they didn't know the answers, or at least that's what they said, but I think that we find it a little more challenging, particularly when we have families, as we all do, where there have been children who have been born not in a marriage. And sometimes, under those circumstances, we lose some of the names. And I think that makes it even more important for us to see the importance of writing down the names, asking questions where we can, finding pictures. I was able to find a number of pictures that were left in an abandoned house. And we looked into the house. We knew it had been a family member. And we found pictures on the floor. We did not initially know who some of those people were, but we took those pictures and we brought them back to show to other family members who did tell us that these were relatives and their names. And I have subsequently on Ancestry.com been able to learn that there were other family members that no one ever mentioned, but they were included in the census record. So it still has me very interested in wanting to know more, trying to fill in those gaps. But I find it just being very, very fascinating. And certainly, I'm glad we're talking about this.
Well, I think that the word embarrassment is the right word, because when you get into this type of
research, your curiosity, as I say, curiosity killed the cat, but satisfaction brought it back. When you get into this type of information search, you will find things that literally you did not know before. And sometimes the things that you did not know before, sometimes people say, I wish I didn't even know now. So that is part of the, if you want to call it, the risk that you take. But we as adults, and I realize everybody is not of the same attitude, but we as adults have to be prepared to the fact and aware of the fact that some of the things that we will uncover or find are things that we might not have initially wanted to know. But that is very much a part of who we are. And as African people, we have to know and understand that we have a strong legacy of children who are born outside of formal marriages. And it's not, that's not new. It is really a leftover, a holdover from the enslavement period, because we know how our women were mistreated. We know how our men were brutalized, but our women were often sexually mistreated. And we have that legacy of a strong amount of children born outside of marriage. But let's remember that the resiliency of we as a people is not based upon the results of ceremonial marriage. It's based upon the internal strength. And of course, I know that's hard to sell to some people, that they find it embarrassing. But it's a true fact that you ought to find that somewhere. Not everybody, but it does exist. And a more mature attitude is to realize, not looking for it, but realize that you may well find that on the way.
I would like for you to repeat that one more time. You said that the value is not in the ceremonial marriage, but in the resiliency of what? That was so profound.
Of the resiliency of those of us who came through the enslavement period, we've got to understand that we have a strong legacy of children born outside of marriage generation to generation. And we were exposed to that from the plantation, particularly where a lot of our women were the victims of sexual rape, violence, and what have you, that often resulted in children born outside of marriage. Now, that legacy of children born outside of marriage is not something we've gone off to cultivate, but it is something that exists. And we cannot afford to be too embarrassed to know about that. That's our history. We don't go looking for that. But we got to have a little more maturity about the fact that that type of thing is there. And if you find that, you just pick it up and keep moving. Nobody asked to be born, and nobody should be shunned, in my attitude at least, or having been born outside of the bonds of a formal marriage.
Thank you. And Patricia Glover, I have a question about your organization, the African American Genealogical Society of Milwaukee. Is that institution sustainable? And I mean, how can we support that institution to be sustainable, because I think it's so valuable to have that institution in our community?
Oh, that's so wonderful. So I want to make sure that we have our website. Our website is, it's just the acronym, AA, G as in George, S as in Sam, OM.org. Again, AAG, S as in Sam, OM.org. And you can become a member. Our membership is for a lifetime membership, it's $150. And the annual fee is only $12. So that's definitely one way that you can support us is to become a member. You can also maybe gift a membership to someone else, buy one, buy a couple of memberships. Especially during the Black History Month, you can post our information on social media, post it on your website, post a link on your website.
Wow, thank you. Mm-hmm. When I was a young boy, my grandmother used to tell me stories about her grandfather, who told her stories about being in the war, and she was talking about redcoats. The redcoats was during the Revolutionary War, right? In the 18th century, it wasn't the Civil War, because her brother was in the Civil War. Now, I'm just wondering, how could I trace back to find out the history of my grandmother's grandfather, who may have served the Revolutionary War?
Right, the steps for genealogy are the same, and again, that's starting with what you know. And before, what we kind of say is, even before you start the research or the Googling, as I did, you know, just take out a piece of paper and write down those memories, write down those thoughts. Sometimes, as a matter of fact, I remember when I first started doing my genealogy research, I spent the first few minutes of it beating myself up and saying, why didn't I listen to my mother when she said that story? Or why didn't I listen to my dad when he was giving me that information? And then it dawned on me, it was like an epiphany. I said to myself, you can't research what you don't know. So focus on what you know, because you'll be so surprised about what you do know. And then there'll be those little serendipities where, you know, just out of a clear blue sky, somebody will call with some information. Or for example, 5 years later, I remembered having interviewing my last aunt, and she pulled out a stack of obituaries from behind the piano. And again, like I said, 5 or 6 years had gone past, but I remembered having that conversation, and I remember her putting those obituaries behind the piano. I didn't even call my uncle, who is still living and still at that house. I just popped up and I said, Annie had some obituaries. Are those obituaries still there? And he said, yes. And then he gave me a picture of my grandmother that was on the wall. And then he gave me a picture of my grandfather as well. So you just never know. You just never know. So that's what you would do, again, is that you have to learn about the records before you can start digging into them a little bit, because military records are, and because you're talking about revolutionary, so that's what, 18th century or it's 19th century. So if you're born in the 20th century, again, it's starting with yourself and working yourself back. Here's a mistake that a lot of genealogists made. I made it. I wanted to go back as far as I can. I wanted to trace my roots back to Africa. I've been to Africa. I haven't traced my roots back there yet. However, I've traced my ancestors to the 1870 census. Well, guess what? There were people who identified as African on that census. So you may not be able to trace your roots back to Africa, but you might be able to trace your roots back to someone born in Africa. So again, the steps are start with yourself, get to familiarize yourself with the sources, and then start looking for people that may.
Let me add, if I may, and you may not know it, but there were some accredited about 5,000 Africans, and they were mostly probably free, but about 5,000 Africans who are known to have fought in uniform in the American Revolutionary War. And in Washington, a man named James Dent Walker did a research project. He was one of the founders of the African American Historical and Genealogical Society here in Washington, D.C. The Daughters of the American Revolution, the DAR, contracted him, he's passed on, but contracted him to research, verify the active military participation of Africans in the American Revolutionary War. If you can find that information through the DAR and find your ancestor if you know name. You, if you want to be, upon documentation, you would be eligible to become a son of the American Revolution, and any of the female members of your family could qualify if they wanted to become members of the DAR, Daughters of the American Revolution. That's very important. Now, the other thing about what you just said, we cross the racial lines. A lot of us don't put any emphasis on it, don't want to, or just forget about it. Your ancestor may have been, that far back, it could have been a white man. And if so, there may be information, and maybe even more, than if he was black. So that is something that you have to come to terms with if, in fact, that is the case, that you might find that this ancestor, that your grandmother's great-grandfather or whatever it might be, was actually on the other side of the color line. That is part of what America is all about. I think you need to be prepared for that. But that is one place where you may get some resources that you never intended to find.
So yeah,
I have one more question, and I know a lot of other people
should
have questions.
Oh, wait, I want to make sure that I, if I could, because he's absolutely right about that, Roez. And there are tons of books, Black Patriots and Loyalists, Fighting for Emancipation and the War for Independence. I know that through my DNA, as well as when I'm doing my research, when you get to a certain point, you have to not only research the African, your African ancestry, but you have to research your European ancestry. And most of the men that were involved, possibly in the enslavement, as well as the Reconstruction years, they were part of War of 1812. Definitely the revolution. I don't know about Revolutionary War so much, but definitely the Civil War. And I've also connected with someone, Denard, I believe, is that, I don't remember that line, but when I looked at my DNA, when I learned that somebody was a patriot, I'll go and check my DNA just to see for chagrin. And it just so happened I was related to maybe a cousin that was a cousin. So when I look at that particular person, I can find him back in on the 1790 census.
Okay.
So, yeah. So all kinds of, we're related to all kinds of people. I'm African. I'm European. I got 0.5% Native American. Different ethnicities, etc. So.
Could we make this part of the public school system to study ancestry? I'm wondering, are there any school districts throughout the country you would think that some of the black schools would have this kind of curricula, you know, or curriculum in their programs? And when you look at not only the educational aspect of ancestry, but also the psychological aspect of genealogy and knowing about your history regarding the feeling of belonging. I'm just wondering if that's something that maybe we should consider. Maybe it's already being done in some schools. I don't know.
I'm not aware of it being offered as an academic subject in any of the schools. It could be possibly at a university level as a academic course for credit. But I personally am not aware of it. I don't know if Patricia knows.
I do know some schools are doing it for a rites of passage type of course. I've seen that at some high schools. Actually, I believe it was in Maryland. On maybe just a class here and there, maybe through African or Black History Month. Other than that, no, it's not a class per se. But I do believe that there's more of an interest in it. Henry Louis Gates has Finding Your Roots, the Seedling program that's specifically for middle schoolers. So there is curriculum out there, and I think the interest is growing. But yeah, we could certainly, you know, talk about putting something together and try to implement it. I'm all for that.
May I interject before we go much further? I don't want to go too far without mentioning my website. If anyone's interested in knowing more about the Quanda family through the website or getting in touch with me through the website, they can do that. The website is www.quandaquality.com. www.quandaquality.com. And I suggest www because if you just go Quanda Quality, you'll get there eventually. But there's so much there, it'll take you, you'll be wandering all over the place looking for me. But that's important. We've got to understand that this research is not something you just do as occasional entertainment. This is really something that makes up the genealogy, the internal mechanism of who you are, who we are. And that's why Patricia and I are so focused on it, because we want you to be successful with this project as you seek to find out just who you are. And I think that there's valuable information out there that each one of us uncover, even if we don't know it yet. And we just want to inspire each of you to be your own personal committee of one, to take it on and do something about it. You may not do as much as the next person. You may do more than the one after that. But every one of us has a valuable story. You just have to pull it out. And I tell people, you don't have to make your heroes be a basketball player or a movie star. Your hero might be grandma or somebody who was a neighbor who's like a family but not actually blood. And this is part of who we are as African people. Villages are full of that history that when we were torn away from the motherland and we did not have blood relatives anywhere nearby, we formed units of people who were like family. And those people who are like family, that's still part of the nurturing of our African-American structures today. And that's part of our culture, and we have to maintain that, and we have to pass it on and nurture it and protect it.
Do we call that community?
We absolutely do. Absolutely.
Listen, it's 7:33, and we have a sponsor message coming up. Also, Dr. James, do we have people on hold who want to join this discussion?
We don't. We've called on those we have so far.
Okay. Well, I believe it's time for a sponsor message at this point.
Sister Sarcha, you have something?
Yes, I'd like to say that sponsors are welcome. Do you have a service you want others to know about? Have you written a book we need to read? Consider becoming a sponsor. Send us an email at sankofacouncilmke@gmail.com. Support the program that is working for you by bringing to you information you will not hear elsewhere that you need to know. Contributions to support our broadcasting efforts can be made to PayPal, sankofa_think@outlook.com. Thank you.
Thank you, Sister Sarcha. We had from our Facebook posting, we had a question, and it says, for many years, I have had bits and pieces and a burning desire to find the real truth about my family. I didn't know where or how to start, nor do I have thousands of dollars to pay someone. I once was young, but now I'm old. Is it too late? Can someone tell me what or where I should do to start? I have only two sons. The oldest is just as interested as I am in knowing what we need to know and where to go. Patricia, can you give us some direction about that question?
Yes. I didn't get the state that they were in. So that does matter. It also matters, you know, whether it's Caribbean or Canada or UK. But again, as I've said before, the first place for someone who is on a budget or wants to do genealogy on a shoestring budget, that would be me. I start out with no, you know, things that I can do for free or no cost to low cost, I kind of say it. And so, again, you can start with FamilySearch, all one word, .org. All you need is a username and a password that you create. And I would say at least get out there and create a tree. Create a tree. You never know who's looking for you. That's what I found. This is a community. I know that Ro just said be your own personal committee of one, but you definitely won't be a community of one because it's a lot of love out here. And I'm hooked on genealogy, and I'll do it until I'm an ancestor. But again, I would start with FamilySearch.org, create a free account out there, create a tree if it's just putting your name. Again, put whatever you know. Don't worry if you know, if say, for example, if you're adopted or you don't know your father's name or if you got a first name or if you got a last name or whatever, if put that name as your parents or as your grandparents. If you have children that are interested, have them do the same thing. Have them create a tree. I would take a DNA test. I would take a DNA test right now. What DNA test would you take? Would I suggest that's always the question, all of them? Not necessarily taking all of them, but the first one I would suggest is Ancestry. Why Ancestry? Because it's the most widely known. It's the most, and it has the largest database, and it's also connected now with FamilySearch. So FamilySearch has been going around the world trying to scan. They're trying to count everybody. Yeah, they're trying to count everyone. So again, both of them are connecting with each other. So take that Ancestry DNA. You would also have access to the records, but not only the records, other relatives' DNA. Then I would suggest taking 23andMe. 23andMe is just another database. It's just going to give another look for your data or your genome, but it's also going to have some different tools that are unlike Ancestry. And then you can upload that information to other databases for free, but you want to be in multiple places because I may not have taken a test with 23andMe. I might have taken a test with Ancestry. I might not have taken a test with MyHeritage. So you want to be and take a couple of tests and then upload tests for free, and then you get the value of 4. So those are some low-hanging things that you can do. In addition to if the people that you're looking for, you said real truth. I'm not sure what that real truth is. If it's identity or relationship, again, you would have to determine that. But if it's an identity that you're looking for, go pull a record. If they're deceased, go pull a death certificate. Try to get a birth certificate. It's going to cost you a little money. Sometimes you can find some indexes online. Lots of different things that you can do to get started. Lots of different things that you can do to get started for free.
The bottom line is it's never too late.
Oh, I'm sorry. Ancestry, there is a fee for Ancestry and for 23andMe. The DNA, that's not free. But you can, give them away for gifts.
Let people know, instead of getting you something for, you know, for Christmas or for a holiday, give me a DNA kit. You know, you can do different things like that.
I think that's a very comprehensive and accurate answer that she's given. And to the caller, I would just say this is a prime example of a little bit of, hopefully this program with us this evening is a source of some excitement for you to pick it up and go forward with it. Because, as I said before, everybody has a story, and we just need to go out and find it. You may find, by reason of putting your mind to it, you will be able to uncover something. And we really want to encourage you to pick up that mantle and do just that, because there's a lot out there. I know we don't have much time, but I just want to wrap my portion up and maybe a little more. I want to say that in the book, if you do get it, The Kwandus in 1684, An Enduring African-American Legacy, you will find that we have been blessed to have made many firsts and continue to do so. We are the only African-American family in the United States to have four generals. We don't know, maybe the only American family with four generals. We're blessed to have four streets named for the family here in the greater Washington, D.C. area. There's a lot more, which I'm not going to go into this evening, but I hope to have piqued your interest enough that perhaps you'll go forward and look on the website, and you'll be able to find out how you can obtain a personally autographed copy if you are so inclined. Turning it back over. Go ahead.
Did you say four generals?
We have four generals. In fact, not only do we have four generals, we've had two of those four generals have been, and one of them currently is, the Commandant of West Point. The Commandant of West Point is the number two position, and there have only been three African-American commandants, and two of them are Quander family members, including the current commandant, General Mark Quander. The prior commandant, General Leo Brooks, his mother was the Quander, and he was the commandant in the early part of the of this decade. So we've been blessed, yes. And but as I say, it's up to the family. Each family can do something, and I'm confident that your listeners, some of them come from, we all come from some place where we can get some information and do something. And I encourage everyone to do that.
I concur. To wrap up my portion, I say genealogy like this. Are you ready to give up who you think you are for who you were born to be? And is it too late to do genealogy? It's never too late. My aunt, we got a letter in the mail in 2005, and there were two sisters who lived 45 minutes from each other, and I believe through religious beliefs and different things like that, they hadn't seen each other in a decade. They both had eight children apiece, and they wanted their seed to know one another. That letter made its way to Milwaukee. I received the letter. My aunt got the letter. I saw that letter. I read the letter, and I was looking for a grammatical error because we're just educators. But it was a perfectly and flawlessly written letter. And there were some pictures that were embedded in the letter, and it looked just, this one picture looked just like my mother when she was 20 years old. I said, I don't know who these people are, but I know they are family. And so I got a car, I got an airline ticket, and 12 of us went down to Georgia, Macon, Georgia. And my aunt, who was in her 70s, got a chance to meet her first cousin for the first time. And we've been having family reunions ever since. So it's never too late, again, to reconnect what God, you know, ordained and put together. So get, you know, take all of this information and do just one thing with it. Thank you.
Absolutely. Amen to that.
You know, when we look at the definition of Sankofa, you know, what Sankofa means is I believe the interpretation, and I can't remember recall what African language, but it says it is not wrong to go fetch that which is on the verge of being lost. And that's not verbatim, of course, but that's my understanding of the principle of Sankofa, and that's the name of our organization. And I'm just wondering, you know, what would the future be like if we actually did go back and fetch that which is on the verge of being lost, like our ancestry, like knowing who we are? How would that have an impact on the future?
It seems like it's an education that we are all going about this process of helping to educate others about something that perhaps they haven't thought about quite in this way. And I see this as the learning about our ancestors as an opportunity to expand the history that our country has experienced. And someone will need to dig it out and bring this to the attention of the rest of the world. And I've been thinking about this in the context of the rioting that took place at the Capitol on January 6th. And as I looked at the Capitol building, I thought about something that I never really considered. And that is, Brother Kwanda, you may be able to speak to this from being from D.C., but I thought about those individuals who actually constructed the Capitol. And I would imagine during that time that many of the workers who built the Capitol may have in fact been enslaved and were brought forth to contribute their skills as craftsmen. And I can just imagine leaving out in the morning on a wagon to come to D.C. To do whatever your assigned part is on the Capitol building, and trying to explain to your family back on that plantation the project that you've been involved with. Something that you've never previously done. And I'd love to be able to know who are the names, perhaps, of those individuals who did, in fact, serve to construct that building. So I think that's a part of history that may be lost. We may have the names of the slave owners, but not the actual persons. But I think that would be an example of something we...
You're absolutely right. That's a tragedy. We have a Emancipation Hall, which is a whole visitor center inside of the United States Capitol, dedicated about 2005. But we do not know who the enslaved Africans were who built the United States Capitol, because they didn't keep track of their names. They kept track of the names of people by payroll, and they didn't get paid, so they would be rented. And the records would show the masters and 50 Negroes, 100 Negroes for a period of 6 months or 1 year. The masters got all of it. But the Congress has recognized that enslaved Africans did build the city of Washington, D.C. Of course, it's not only they. There were others, too. But they've tried to make some belated amends by creating Emancipation Hall in the capital of the United States. But the whole history of this nation, and truly it is our history, is one, we are the men and the women who did block on block, brick on brick over a sustained period of time. And we can dig some of those records out, and the history of Washington, D.C. does have some. But as far as who physically was engaged in building of the United States Capitol building is unknown. But it is such a strong presence of enslaved Africans that we can no longer, I say we, not us, but people can no longer pretend that this was a project done by Europeans, because it clearly was not. And the more and sooner we get to know and understand and learn and appreciate that, the better off we'll all be.
Dr. James?
Go ahead.
Dr. James?
Yes.
This is Theodore from the 334. Just real quick, does the name Benjamin Banneker pop up, Brother Kwanda, in your family?
Well, Benjamin Banneker's name does not pop up in our family. However, Benjamin Banneker was the first African. He was a free black man, born of a black family line on the father's side and a white family line on the mother's side. And he was a brilliant self-taught man. And he is the one who initiated the survey to lay out the city of what became Washington. He did not build it, and it was not his plan. A lot of people misunderstand that. He didn't come here to build it. He came here to do the survey upon which the plan was constructed. And he was the first free man, a free black man, to get a presidential, well, actually it was a federal government appointment, appointed by Secretary of State Thomas Jefferson, who was not yet president, who allegedly didn't realize that he was a black man at the time that he appointed him, because the talent of Banneker was touted as a man of great skill, and he was hired sight unseen, according to what we understand. And when Thomas Jefferson realized it was a black man, well, the fix was in, so he went ahead and did it. And he came and began the survey, until the company that was contracted to do the survey finished another project, and they were able to come to Washington and continue it. Banneker left, went back to Ocala, where he was from, up in Maryland, and then proceeded to publish for several years his well-known, well-established almanac. So that is the story of Benjamin Banneker, really.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'd like to try to sneak in one quick question. I know it's almost time to end. But I'm just wondering, would it be too naive to think that having a sense of belonging through ancestry, if that would translate into higher self-worth, and if people had higher esteem and self-worth in our community, would they be investing in themselves much better, like our youth and education, and would that also translate into how we relate to each other in community? Because we're killing ourselves. In Milwaukee, we have a record number of homicides. My alma mater, we just had 5 children who got shot last week. Now kids have guns, and when the amygdala takes over and they snap and do or say something that they're sorry for later, then we have the consequences and the carnage that we have right now in our community. So I'm wondering, would ancestry have an impact on that, knowing who you are and having a feeling, a sense of belonging? Would that translate to a higher self-esteem and self-worth?
Well, you had sort of asked a similar question about genealogy and ancestry and what it would do to one person. My own personal experience is I found it healing. Being able to go back and look at my mother's story and find different things that I thought I knew, again, it helped me see her from a different perspective. And actually, I found compassion, about how she grew up and the time frame in which she had to become who she had to become. So that's one thing. And then I just want to add this line. It's called Your 16 Great Challenge. It's by Andrean Fikes is her name. It's a TED Talk, and I can certainly send that information as a follow-up. But she has this line in it where she says, this Great 16 Challenge, again, it's for you to find your great-great-grandparents. There are 16 of them. And she said, this Great 16 Challenge is a target.
but it's not the purpose. I'm challenging you to expand your definition of personal growth and development. Begin to notice what it does for you to be able to call your ancestors by their name. How might it shift things about the way you love yourself? When we talk about violence in America, we have 400 million guns in America. And so I look at violence from that perspective and not just a person like African American or European American or Latina. We have a gun problem and a gun issue in this country. May it change some individuals? I think there are some reports that are out there that says that when an individual knows who they are and where they come from, not necessarily the environment, but who they come from and whose they come from, yes, I do believe that it makes a difference. You're talking to two individuals who got it from birth. So I really can't say all I know is family. And so it's definitely shaped in who I am, shaped and molded who I am and how I walk about and how I move about. So I think that genealogy and ancestry and family history, it's an individual thing.
Absolutely.
And it's a choice. And so it can or can't.
We're going to have to end here. We thank you so much for sharing with us in the ways that you have. And Papa Robinson, would you please close us out?
Yes, thank you, guests and San Copa Council for the support of this program and for sharing the vision for our unity following Afrocentric principles and helping us to learn and use these principles in our lives. We look forward to bringing to you more programs that we hope you will enjoy. Visit our sponsor, www.edocadvice.com, and the Finley Medical Clinic. Good night and stay safe. Sankofa family, all of you, until we meet again. Man, we ran out of time. I really wanted to have
more conversation.
And maybe we have to have part three or part two. Thank you so much. I love you guys and the work that you do. And I will be supportive. I'm going to get the book, and I'm going to also support the African-American Genealogy Society of Milwaukee.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for having me.
Yes,
that was
thank
fun.
You so much. My pleasure.
Swing low, sweet chariot, coming for to carry me home. Swing low, sweet chariot, coming for to carry me home. Swing low, sweet chariot, coming for to carry me home. Swing low, sweet chariot, coming for to carry me home.
I love Jordan, and what did I see?
Coming for to carry me home.
A band of angels coming after me,
coming for to carry me home. Swing low, sweet chariot, coming for to carry me home.
If you can bear me, for I do,
coming for to carry me home.
To carry.